Cambridge 105, community radio in your city, walking on broken glass, and from broken glass to a wine glass. Nigel Beaumont is here with our monthly wine review. Hello, Nigel, you're very welcome.
Yes, good afternoon, Gillian. Thank you very much.
I should have put you on the red microphone, really. We don't have a white one, but we'll do our best. Maybe get a rosé one in as well.
Well, I'm on the purple one, which is closer to a good quality red wine, so that's okay.
I guess it kind of is. We're talking about Italian wines today.
Yes, we are. Yes. It's a big subject, and I realised when I started doing my research that there's no way that I was going to be able to cover it. So I've really cherry-picked quite a number of the ones that would be commonplace or commonly known by people in the UK, and just provide a little bit of information on that. But interestingly, Italy is the second largest producer of wine in the world. It produces 45 to 50 million hectolitres of wine a year.
How much is a hectolitre? how what would I need to put it all in?
I knew you were going to ask that.
You should have raised it then.
5 billion litres.
Oh, dear.
Which is about a third of the global production. And there are over a million vineyards in cultivation in Italy, and the Italians rank third in the world for wine consumption. Britain, interestingly, comes sixth after China. So it's a big, big deal, actually, and they produce an awful lot of very good quality wine, although sometimes you might not think so when you drink the cheaper Pinot Grigios and the Chiantis, but go for the slightly more expensive ones, and they are excellent quality. The grape varietals are numerous, and some are better known in the UK, such as Pinot Grigio, Trebbiano, which produces the Frascati, Garganesia, which produces the Suave. So all of the whites have a characteristic of being fairly crisp, dry, go really well with Italian food if white is your favourite. You know, pizzas, pasta, the white meats, veal, that sort of thing goes really well with that. The reds, they are really strong on the reds, and you know, they have a wide range of it depending on where they're produced. If they're up in the mountains in the north, you'll get sort of really fresh wines. If you're going right down to the heel in Lazio, you're getting the Primitivos, which are very, very fruity, strong, very very easy to drink if you've got a barbecue going or something like that, because the flavours will overpower or certainly match the smoky flavours of barbecues.
Mm. The Italians, like the French, another major wine producer I think we've discussed in the past, both do food very well and do wine very well. And does it follow that Italian wine works best with Italian food as opposed to French wine, which working with Italian food, or is it just possible you just mix and match according to what the food is and take the most appropriate wine to go with it?
Well, a good rule of thumb is to match the wine of that country to their food, and that's why if you're looking at pizza, a really good Italian red will go really well with that, and if you're looking at lamb, a very good Australian wine will go with that, because, of course, they produce an awful lot of sheep in Australia.
So, and do the wine producers, do they think about that when they're developing the wine, or is it just something which follows automatically almost?
No, I don't think it works that way, really. But it does, you know, when you're actually developing your wine, it depends on the grapes that you have, and so I don't think it works that way.
No, you can't send the grapes off in a particular direction by doing something to the soil or something.
You can affect what's the end product to a degree, but not so much, but it's quite a good rule of thumb, as I say, if you are actually looking to match a wine, apart from the fact that you should be very careful not to overpower any of the flavours in the food, you can choose what you like, but for example, as I say, the Primitivo goes extremely well with a barbecue, and I'll put on the website a really good Primitivo, which is locally available. So just running through a couple of the grape varieties from the reds, which will be, I guess, a bit familiar to some drinkers, is the Aionico, which is grown in the Campania Basilicata region, which is down on the Amalfi Coast. It's a thick-skinned grape, so it produces a very heavily tannic, spicy red wine. Probably needs to be aged a bit to soften the tannins, but good to look out for. So, as I say, it's pronounced Aionico. It's spelled Aglanico, A-G-L-A-N-I-C-O. Next one mentioned is Montepulciano, not to be confused with the village in Tuscany. This is a grape which is grown in the Abruzzo region, which is central Italy, east of Rome. Fruity, light, very light tannins, very drinkable just as by itself without food. Corvina is which the Valpolicella comes from, so look out for that. Sangiovese, a wine, a grape, which is the basic constituent of Chianti. Chianti Classico has 70% of Sangiovese in it. And interestingly, I found out when I was doing the research that Chianti started as a white wine. But it was soon overrun by the red grape variety, and it now is worldwide. The Sangiovese grape can be found in Argentina and can be found in the US as well. So, you know, you'll be able to try that in its various different versions, but as I say, it's the main constituent of Chianti. You have to be beware of Chianti because it is a fairly fairly bulk-produced wine, and the cheaper versions can not be as nice as if you spend a few pounds more.
Right, and it is a few pounds more, isn't it? It's not a fortune more often. You just need to, buy the £7 instead of the £5 or upwards from there.
Yes, exactly. The example which I'm going to give on the website is £10.39. It's a very good Chianti. It doesn't come in the traditional basket-wrapped bottle. And it is extremely nice, and it's £10.39. It's a 2010 Chianti, so well worth just spending a few more pounds on that. Something to look out for, which you might come across, are the Super Tuscans. Not known as that, but in fact, the Chiantis sometimes are sold under that name because Chianti has a very strict blend of 70% Sangiovese, 30% of Trebbiano or Malvasia. Anything outside that is not supposed to be called Chianti, but it is on occasion, and it fits into the category of the Super Tuscans.
Right.
So keep an eye on those as well. Just going back to the Primitivo, which is also known as Zinfandel in the US, so same grape, grown in Puglia, very robust, very rustic. A couple of really nice examples from Majestic and from Bacchanalia in Cambridge. So look out for those. Really good for summer drinking with the barbecues. Just speaking briefly about sparkling wines, as we all recognise the sparkling wines from Italy. Asti's come from the Piedmont. They're sweet, low in alcohol, usually served as a dessert wine. Lambrusco, which is the most popular, comes from Emilia-Romagna area, most highly rated in the red or the rosé version, and it can come as dry to sweet. And, of course, Prosecco, produced in the Veneto region around the west of Venice. It's a grape called the Ghiera grape. It used to be called Prosecco, but they changed the name. Produced in dry and extra dry versions. If that is chilled, very chilled, it is really, really nice and refreshing.
I have to confess, I'm very fond of Prosecco, possibly more so than champagne, actually. It's,
me too. And it's great not only in hot weather. We used to drink it on the slopes as we were skiing. It's a very nice tipple to have halfway down the slopes if you just need a bit of refreshment.
I thought the warning is not to drink and ski at the same time, but
well, it's not a good idea, but maybe one glass.
You pick up another bottle as you go by.
Yes, indeed.
Nigel, thank you very much as always, and you'll put some of the detail about that, which we can add to the website when the podcast goes up a little later.
Yes, I will, certainly.
That's great. Thanks as always. Nigel Beaumont, our wine expert.